And we're back on Man Talk 6 on Off Planet Radio Live. I'm Randy Moggins with Vinny Eastwood and David Whitehead. And we are continuing the Man Talk experience, which is a rather loose, informal, but nevertheless usually pleasant and always erudite exploration of the consciousness of the entire human race as we represent them. Guys, welcome back for the second round.
Hey, what's up?
I think it would be interesting at this point to kind of go into something that I've wanted to ask each of you, and I'll toss in mine as well. But it has to do with waking up. You know, I think maybe it's useful to share waking up experiences with people because a lot of people have no idea how painful all of this is. Vinny, I can always tell when Vinny's in pain because he tells more jokes. He does more humor. He does what's reflexive to him in dealing with it. And that's his unique expression of his anger and his pain. But let's kind of go around the round table and share the waking up experience a little bit because it's useful for people who will hear this, who are like on a threshold or just like walking into this thing of what it's like and what awareness really is. That's good, great word, awareness. Let's start with you, David. How did you begin waking up? What was the moment, what was the memory freshest in your mind of when you began to suspect things were not exactly the way they appeared to be and your own arc into not only waking up, but waking up other people?
Well, I can say that it wasn't just one thing, but I do have many memories, and it reflects the same emotions that definitely were triggered. And for me, I was raised in a very interesting environment and with a very particular brand of a fundamentalist religious ideology that scared the living crap out of me. And I was surrounded by people that were very much miseducating me about the nature of reality and what my mission and my purpose was and who I was supposed to be and what I was supposed to believe. And I didn't know how to translate that. I didn't know how to, because it was my only exposure being a young child was to people who thought like this. I shouldn't say only exposure, but that was the overwhelming influence. And my parents at the time doing what they felt was best. And they've since, you know, I love them dearly and they're amazing. And they listen to my show all the time. They support me wholeheartedly. But at the time they were just going off the information that they had and they were trying to surround me with only one view and one paradigm, and which was extremely frightening to me. And I think I rejected it right off the bat because inherently, or I guess intuitively rather, it just didn't vibe with me. And it created a great deal of distortion in my mind. And it actually messed me up through my earlier years, my early teens, and of course, adolescence in general is just a tough ride as it is. But trying to navigate that through a lot of various challenges, I found it to be, it was very, very, I was borderline depressed. I was outright depressed. I was diagnosed, of course. My parents took me to the doctor. And of course, they're like, oh, he's bipolar. He has all these mental disorders. He's, you know, expressing, you know, all these different things. And I'm just like, look, I'm just confused. And I just need someone to help straighten me out. Like, I really don't know where up is and where down is. And so for me, it was a constant dark night of the soul experience. And I think that what really woke me up was that I was going to have to be the one ultimately to pull myself out of that situation. And what I mean by that is in my own mind, I started to realize that I can't rely on other people to assist me with that problem. That problem was something that was going on within me. And it was something that I needed to go on the journey of correcting and working with. And it took a lot of years of and part of it was deep investigation. That's what drove me to do comparative religious research and study throughout my whole life, which I continue today, and I very much enjoy doing that. Looking at history and everything else, it's what drove me into martial arts because I didn't have any confidence. So martial arts for me was one way of expressing. You know, you're talking about how Vinny and comedy, that works well for him. For me, it was martial arts. It was a bit of music. And I found that that was a great outlet. So it was a progression thing. And then when I started to see that the world was reflecting this sort of schism in one way or another through what we were being told by government, and I got into the political thing and the media and everything, and I started realizing, oh my God, we're not being told the truth. We're actually being outright lied to. And then 9/11 took place, and I, you know, all of that. And I just started questioning that. And so it's a lot, but it's really that it was extremely painful, as you were talking about, Randy. It was, I remember writhing on the floor in tears beside myself with no solution. I felt like I would rather just die. It really got bad. And this was when I was in my early to mid teens, and it took a while for me to get out of it. And it wasn't one particular thing that got me out of it, but I must say that it was from some of the simplest people actually in my life. Some of the people that maybe didn't have any real deep, profound philosophical things to talk to me about or whatever, but they encouraged me. It was an encouragement. They were like, no, you know, I understand that this is the situation you're in, but you can get out of this. You can do this. And it was just this motivational thing that started changing me, where I got the confidence ultimately to get to a point where I could trust my own reason again, and I could connect with my intuition and get past the programming that was keeping me in a state of fear. And when I got through that, obviously it's still a journey, but you get through it stage by stage, you just get stronger and stronger. So the only thing I would say to people is, while you're going through this process of realizing that there's a lot more to what you're being told and there's a lot more to this life, is that you need to take it in stride, and you got to recognize that it's not something that happens overnight. It's a process, and you just need to work towards that ability to empower yourself so that you have the confidence to go through it, because you can. I guess I would say that if I could do it in the strait that I was in growing up, in the situation I was in, man, I think anybody could do it.
Yeah.
That's the long answer.
Actually, that was kind of a great answer, because it was personal. But again, there's always the trauma aspect to it and how you deal with it. And Vinny, I'll flip it over to you, because your coping mechanism to me is very unique, because I don't really have this gift of humor. I mean, I'm occasionally funny, but it's usually not in the way that you do it. You're an engineer of humor as a defensive art or an offensive art.
Well, it is pretty offensive. A lot of the time, I must say. The missus doesn't agree with you at all. No, like, seriously. She'd rather... And I mean, because, like, you know how I'm, like, always interjecting jokes and everything during the shows and everything. In real life, that doesn't stop. Trust me, you can really easily get sick of ridiculously lame jokes. I don't know exactly what point it is, but at some point, you begin to hate the jokes. And after a certain other point gets reached, you begin to hate me for telling them.
Well, I think what we should do is, maybe in about a year or so, we'll bring your wife on and ask her.
Like, what her coping mechanisms are, you know? Like, this is her wake-up story, you know?
How do you contend with this maniac? How do you contend with this man who is constantly on?
Oh, yeah. It's I don't know how she does it. She's got a strength, you know. I've got to say that. You know, I've got a lot of respect for that.
But truthfully, I admire your energy. Actually, both of you, you know, I
admire. Well, people always ask me how I get so much energy, bro. Listen to this. It's not rocket science. Drink large quantities of coffee while on radio.
The real secret is he's permanently wired.
Well, not permanently, just when I'm on air, which can sometimes take several hours a day. So pretty much daily. And it gets to the point where you get so freaking exhausted and what have you, because you're like high off this caffeine. I actually had to come up with a new term called caffeined. You know, that's what I am. I'm a fiend for the caffeine. Mm. And anyway, in terms of wake-up stories, mine's kind of like a real long one. Like, David tried to give off like a long version of his, and it took like 7 minutes. I did like a 3-hour show one time.
Divulged. It's really hard to, yeah.
Yeah.
How do you contain it?
Well, it's kind of like in stages, okay? First of all, get hit from my dad as a kid, then get abused by other kids at school. I had a real bad anger problem. They thought I had ADHD, but my mum knew that I just needed a father figure around or what have you after the divorce, so she got a guy around. I stopped being violent. And then I realized that I actually had kind of like the gift of the gab, won a senior speech competition, and I even financed my trip down to university by writing, directing, producing, and financing my own play that was put on at Artworks and Waiheke Island, a little community hall and that kind of thing, and I got enough money to send me down to university after a couple of weekend showing. And when I was down at university, as is normally happens, you start smoking cannabis, you start selling maybe a little bit of weed, and then you get busted by the cops. And then you can't even breathe properly, and you're staggering, and you're like wondering what the hell's happening to you. You later find out that what you were having was a panic attack when the police were cutting off your shoelaces and everything like that before they put you in a cell. You know, you lose your girlfriend of 2 years, a beautiful Japanese girl, and you can't really ever go to her homeland. So you kind of like send her an email in tears, saying, "Honey, you know it's not going to happen. We can't be together if I can never even come to your country, because Japan will never let anybody in with a drug dealing criminal conviction, like, ever." So that's a bit of a pain in the ass there. All of the friends and everything like that you were dropping around, smoking weed with, and having a good time with, and everything like that, you never see them again. They were never your friends. And you know, your mum gets like 10 grand in debt in order to pay a lawyer just to basically say that, hey, you didn't advise him of his right to remain silent before he gave you the full confession. And then after that, you know, you're living at home and doing your community service, doing a little bit of vineyard work and what have you, riding your bike around. One time I came off the retaining wall at full speed off the bike and then landed on my head on the road a couple of meters shy. had a helmet on, thank goodness, but yeah, mum wouldn't have any of it, so I still had to ride the 15 kilometers to work at a regional park and dig out weeds and everything all day after sustaining that injury. That was fun. You start to realize just how tough you are when you don't have a choice, you know, like your body actually needs to work, therefore it does. It's quite interesting. It doesn't matter what you want to do or what you wish you could do or what you think you can do. If you have to do it, you do it. Isn't that interesting? Apart from the times when, you know, you accidentally break a leg or something like that trying to do a ridiculously awesome high kick. But what happened then is I took mescaline, and I took this trip and I started to actually think that I could see my future self or whatever. And I started asking it questions, and it gave me a whole heap of advice. One piece of advice was to go back to university in Auckland this time, not a freaking 1,000 clicks away from my family and support network, and get a job as a telesalesman. And I did. I became the number one telesalesman by the end of my 2-year tenure. I was like number one top of the board for 6 months. I was making a lot of money. Living at large and what have you. And then I start watching all these people who are like scum, basically, tell me how to do my job, and stealing my ideas and not valuing me for them. Basically, corporate psychopaths or whatever is what I was dealing with. Job after job after job after job. Freaking run by corporate psychopath boss after corporate psychopath boss. I was a corporate psychopath boss in the telco industry. I couldn't take it. I was getting depressed as hell. I was smoking copious quantities of ganja every single morning before going out to work because I just couldn't handle selling people anything for these freaking psychopaths. I was like in a real bad place. And then I got myself a bonus. I got $11,900 worth of Westfield shopping vouchers and a paycheck of like $4,500 for about a month's work. I was really good at my job, by the way. That was my last ever proper full-time official paycheck, was that amount. And I used that as a justification for going out and getting a a video camera, a Mac computer, going out to public protests and meetings and so on and so forth, videoing them, just basically doing it. I always wanted to like make videos and movies and everything like that. Somebody at a party once just said, if you want to do it, just do it. So I did. I got noticed on YouTube by a wonderful man named Mitch Santel, who is producing the American Freedom Report with Dave Von Kleist on American Freedom Radio with Brent Johnson. And then Dave Von Kleist had to leave that show, and they were offering up a co-hosting position. They gave that position to me, and then they decided they didn't like the original host, Brent, so they gave the entire show to me. And it's been going for 3.5, 4 years now. I'm the only New Zealand-based talk radio show and YouTube channel that's putting up content extraordinarily regularly, with 3 hours a day, 5 days a week now. I've expanded to with the talk radio show. You know, interviewed all the big people, George Norrie, David Icke, Jordan Maxwell, the guy from Thrive, all sorts of
Foster Gamble,
Alan Watt, and all these other wonderful
Rick
people. Rick Simpson. I've had him on a number of times. He and I were just cracking up so hard the last interview together. And I found out my place, my purpose. It's because I've been through like so much crap, and believe you me, I'll give you the short version. We all do give the short versions of the crap shit that happens to us. but you have to learn to deal with it, because that experience isn't going to go away. It's going to be there in the back of your mind, reminding you every single day, right, of how harsh life can be and how awesome it is now that you've got it, even if it's not really that great. And even if you're still piling on all these layers of neuroses and things of this nature as you overcompensate and make excuses for your atrocious behavior in order to escape these things that you're having to deal with. For me, I've decided to use that energy instead to give people a little bit of reprieve. Because whenever you're talking about incredibly serious topics, things that really destroy your life, it's not easy to deal with, and it actually hurts just to listen to. You have a look at just how many social workers and everything need their own caseworkers or psychologists and things like that to counsel them, because just hearing about people's pain causes you pain. And there's so many of these activists and people who have been shafted by the system left, right, and freaking center, and it's just nobody's like bringing them on and saying, hey, just tell us about yourself and let's have a few laughs. You know, nobody was doing that. I wonder why, because that's how they normally would talk to people. If they sit out with somebody in a cafe that's of like mind, they just sit there and they have a couple of drinks and they have a few laughs and they tell each other stories. They're very interested to listen, very interested to talk as well, and elaborate and question and shoot the breeze. You know, that's what I thought was really needed in this entire truth movement. We've got all the information, we've got all the fear-mongering, we've got all the researchers, investigative journalists, all the serious stuff's been taken care of by very, very talented people who are way better at researching than me. But I can make shitty puns, huh? And keep up with the conversation with some of the most educated people in the world. I can make them laugh. I can make them smile. I can actually make them enjoy their life, despite all the shit that's coming down and raining down upon them daily. I can help them to see through the veil a little bit, to help them realize that if you can laugh, you can prevent yourself from going fucking crazy.
That's awesome.
And actually, what you do when you interview is you actually allow people to be themselves, to relax enough to bring all of that out in what is perceived as a safe atmosphere, because it is deep, dark shit that we're dealing with a lot of times. I wish I could air some of the phone conversations I've had with people, the emails that I get from people, because I deal in largely two areas for the most part. I mean, I do the politics, the economics and stuff like that, but I deal with UFO abductions and mind control people, specifically coming out of Black Projects. And what I've learned in the last 10 years about some of the things that have been done to people makes my relatively middle-class white bread American life seem like a feather bed. At the same time, I don't have your gift of humor, but what I do is I kind of embrace people at the level that they feel safe, which a lot of times is what people really need. They need to be affirmed. They need to feel safe. They need to feel like it's not going to be reprisal for telling you things that sound incredibly insane on the surface of it. You know, a friend of mine who's a researcher and a moderator for David Icke signs her emails with the tagline that says, "I will believe you." Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to believe bullshit. And there are people that will bring you bullshit. But I'm talking about some of the darkest stuff that sometimes it takes me days to get it out of my head, if I can get it out of my head at all. So, you know, there's different approaches to all of this, the waking up, the dealing with the trauma that the world's in, because the whole planet's been traumatized. And that's what makes me ache. I'll just share this. I began waking up really young. There's a lot of things I already knew when I was a kid. And part of it was that we lived in a time that was decisive for humanity. And to explain how I know that or how I felt that is in itself a whole long thing. But suffice to say that when I was about 10 or 11 years old, the Vietnam War we were in the last days of it. But they drafted people for the Vietnam War. And there was a guy who lived in my town. I lived in a very small town. This guy's name was Tucker. He was 6 foot tall. He was redhead, curly hair, freckled, very good looking guy, an athlete, the kind of guy that could pull off wearing a varsity jacket. Now, in those days here in America, the evening news was a centerpiece of the media parade that you got. We only had three networks in those days, and it was in black and white. Every night, the ritual was the news came on and you watched the war. And I remember looking at that then and thinking, this is so wrong. There's something wrong with this. My father was a Korean War veteran and fully supported anything that the military did. It was like carte blanche. I grew up around, like you, David, kind of conservative, religious in a way, but very conservative, staunch Americans who believed America could do no wrong. And I watched this war, and then I watched this guy that I admired go off to Vietnam, and he did not come back. And so 10, 11 years old, I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking, you know what? This is real. This eats people. The system eats people. And I remember, honestly, just sitting for hours contemplating what that meant exactly, because conceptually, in the mind of, you know, a child, basically, how do you baseline the idea that you can take somebody, pluck them out of their life, tell them they have to go into another country on the other side of the world and fight an enemy that they've never faced before and lay down their life for something as abstract as a nation? And so that was kind of the beginning seeds of all of this. When I was probably about 17 years old, I met somebody who spent a day regaling me about Freemasonry and what we now call the New World Order, the Illuminati. Basically, it was the talk that went, this is how it really is. This is how the world works. I went out into the world and tried to make a living and basically failed at just about everything I've ever done, and realized that it wasn't because I didn't work hard and I wasn't smart and I wasn't lazy. And when I was in a sales job, I realized that there were deals being made. This was corporate level sales, and there were deals that were made behind your back and under the table that pretty much guaranteed that your competitor going in the door who was doing the handshake at the lodge was going to get the business. The rest of it was just a show to pretend that we had a competitive, quote, free enterprise system. And so I went down that road. I went down the spiritual road as well, the horrible realization that religion made no sense. The religion I was raised with, which was pretty much, you know, conservative fundamentalist Christianity, was just insane. That you read the Old Testament and the Bible and you go, well, this God's a murderer. You know, this guy wants people sacrificed. He wants you to pillage and loot and rape and steal and destroy. And yet he claims that he's the creator of the human race. And that was a dark road that I went down for 10 years. And this happened after I had been ordained as a minister. So imagine my surprise to find myself about 5 years ago detoxing from religion and realizing just what kind of deep shit this world is in, and watching it spiral out of control after 9/11 with the Patriot Act here in the United States, and seeing how all of a sudden the world was getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And the pain really doesn't go away until you find a place inside of yourself that's peaceful. And I had never learned that. I had externalized everything my whole life, my traumas, my fears, my pains, my rage. As people who are close to me would know, I was very angry. And it takes a long time to figure out what makes you so angry that you are basically making people around you's lives miserable as well. And so for me, it was putting the pieces together where, how do you have peace in a world where there's no peace? And the answer is, the kingdom is within you, and that's where your peaceful space is. And so that's kind of real, real Cliff Notes version of where I'm at in terms of my own waking up and walking out into the world as somebody who can warn people about what's going on.
So that they could, so that they too can have their life destroyed.
Yes, basically.
Have you noticed that that's exactly what we're doing to people? And in fact, we're doing it to ourselves. It's like we're breaking ourselves down so we can rebuild it from the ground up, you know? And it's not an easy process. I mean, I actually warned a friend of mine, like, he didn't even know fluoride was bad for him kind of thing, you know? And I warned him, bro, if you actually want to start looking into this stuff, all right, it's gonna cost you, all right? It's gonna cost you a lot of your friendships, a lot of the relationship that you have with your families, strained though they may be already. You know, you don't have any idea what happens when you become a conspiracy theorist. It's even worse than being a smoker. Seriously, you get treated like a leper if you're a smoker.
I know. I have people this day. Because I'm compulsive, there's a point where I'll humor people in their illusions, and there's a point where I will just open my mouth and it will come out. And when I'm done, they'll look at you and they'll go, oh, my God. I remember explaining the income tax system to a coworker one day, because I was having problems with the revenue people. And he seemed to think that I was a criminal. And I went, well, no, not really. I mean, there really isn't actually a law that requires us to do this. And he looked at me and I said, would you want to know the truth about this? I said, because quite frankly, everybody that's filled out tax forms and signed it under penalty of perjury is a liar, because you've never read the frickin' law. I read the law. I analyzed the law. When I finished the conversation an hour and 30 minutes later, this person was white as a sheet and totally amazed that I was able to spew all of this out, how the tax system in America worked and why it was not compulsory under law. It was actually voluntary, but they tell you it's voluntary, but if you don't volunteer, they're going to take your money and put you in jail. So those are the kind of things that are painful, because you go, did I really win one there or did I just lose it? I mean, there's kind of the gentle way to do it, and sometimes it's hard and fast, and I don't know which is better sometimes.
Oh, I hear you, man. And I just wanted to say, just listening to both of you open up your personal story in that way, that I commend you both, and I feel very connected to both of the situations, and I like this type of radio. I like honest, open, real people discussing these things, and that's what people need to understand, is that these people like us that are questioning the status quo and that are investigating the true nature of reality and what's really going on, we're real people. We're not crazy. We're not insane. We're trying to figure out what's going on here, and we have a deep caring for our, you know, our fellow humanity and what's going on in the world, the direction. Well, I do, okay? And I think that at the end of the day, we're all here trying to do the same thing. And there was something interesting that I noticed was that, Randy, you were discussing how you were saying that, you know, Vinny has his talent with, you know, humor and going and expressing himself through that. And then you have brought forward what you feel is your talent. And of course, I work with what I feel are my gifts. And what's interesting about this is that none of this kind of discussion is ever discussed really in school or in a job, or if anything, they want to use your talents in a job. So they're like, oh yeah, no, that guy's good. He's going to make us a lot of money in that area. Right. Whereas this is just contribution to a body of knowledge. And what we're doing is contributing our energy in our own unique way. And anybody that's listening that feels like they don't have a voice and they couldn't do what we do, man, we're just like you. We're regular people. I'm a father. I'm a husband. I run a business. I have a house. I don't have a lot of money, and I live my life. And I live in Canada. That's it. That's who I am. No, I don't have any PhDs. I don't have any fancy letters after my name. But I've done a great deal of study and research, and it brings me to a point that I'm sure both of you resonate with, which is this whole thing about credibility. Here we are. You know, Randy, you're sharing with somebody the truth about the tax system. And Vinny, I'm sure both of you and I talk to people on a daily basis about some of these issues to one extent or the other. But what is the thing that really separates it? People will listen to what you're saying and go, well, you know what? You're just you, and you don't have any expertise in the field because you haven't been given an official accolade by the system to recognize your research. So therefore, you're not credible. And that's why everything you say is wrong. Not, let's talk about the actual information. Let's look at the evidence. Let's, you know, correlate with the actual experts that have documented this. No, it's just about no credibility whatsoever. And these are the people challenging your argument. And the people doing that, they haven't even done 5 seconds of research into this.
The stupidest people in the world, with rare exceptions, are credentialed experts. People with lots of degrees who have spent years in academia studying subjects. Now, there are exceptions to that, and there are brilliant exceptions to that. And I've met them and I've interviewed them, as have both of you. But in the mainstream, the most dangerous people out there, and Vinny, you ticked the list off at the beginning of the show, are these professionals, the people who are credentialed, licensed, and basically considered to be the so-called experts on things. They are mainstream. They're stagnant. They are completely entrenched in a mindset that's not fluid or flexible anymore. And quite frankly, internally, many of them are soul dead, in my opinion.
Yeah, they only have the intellect. They don't have the gents part of that. They just have the intellect.
Well, they have rote memorization, which is basically what education is. You can be very good at spewing out facts. I mean, I'm very good at memorizing things. But at the end of the day, that's heartless. I'd much rather sit here and have this kind of conversation than to sit down and be regaled by some expert on facts and figures. I find it dull and boring.
It's not interactive.
No, it's not interactive because it's not at your level. It's not at a level you can attain.
Well, that's because they're insane, bro, all right? That's why I call them academia nuts. You know, see, personally, I can never lose credibility. You know why? Because I never claim to have any. I do claim, however, to be absolutely incredible.
Exactly. And everybody else out there that's listening should know that they are the same.
Yeah, in their own way. And that's the thing. None of us have any credibility. None of us have any credibility except those who claim that we have it. But if we claim that we have it, we can lose it if we mess up. All right. So as I claim to have no credibility whatsoever, nothing I say might be 100% backed up by evidence that have totally gone down into like some deep archive in the Pentagon papers or something, like shuffled it through with a flashlight or something like that. No, I don't really have any first-hand knowledge. I'm in frickin' New Zealand, bro. What the hell happens in New Zealand? Nothing, all right? And this is how most people learn, actually. It's like, have you ever played the game Chinese Whispers? You whisper something in one person's ear, and they have to try and repeat it to the next person. As you go around a circle, you wind up losing the message completely, and it winds up changing into something completely different. And I'm cognizant of that I'm listening to all of these different radio sources, listening to all of these activists and people from all over the place. I don't know if what they're telling me is 100% the truth. I haven't looked at the evidence entirely, haven't looked at any of the documentation. So what I have to do is argue from a point of humble ignorance. You know, I realize I don't really know anything. However, this bit here doesn't make sense. To start questioning, and the way I contribute to deeper research is certain things occur to me in a simplistic way that don't occur to other people. I'm capable of summing up complex ideas in a very short space of time using only a few words. It's one of my gifts. I'm good at naming things as well. It's wordsmithing. It's what I do. And invariably, you will have many people who have a meta-understanding of one particular subject matter, something that is so incredibly complex and diverse that it's really taken one person's entire life, more or less, to study into it deeply enough to have a profound understanding. I can accumulate and relay that profound understanding in a matter of hours to a listening audience. That's the contribution that I give. I don't say that everything that this person is telling the truth, but whatever the truth of whatever they're saying is, sure enough, you'll get it out of them by making them feel like they're having a bit of fun. And this is a profound lesson to me as a truther, because I'm very, very angry all the time about nothing and about everything simultaneously. Do you have any idea how infuriating that is? Not knowing what it is that's really pissing you off? The thing that was really, really pissing all of us off, really, at the end of the day, at that point, was we were so angry that we weren't contributing to solving the problems that were pissing us off. Really, once you start doing something, once you start changing something, once you can see results of your work and you can see community starting to flourish because of your ideas, because of how much assistance you've provided to your community over the years, as I have with my videography and everything like that, I'm unmatched, unparalleled. And there is a residual effect of what I have done and changed in this country. I'm the first person to ever do something like this, to like fully go out independent, no corporate sponsorship, no nothing, and just cover what the activists and everything are saying that the news never lets them do. You know,
whereas me, on the other hand.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
That's a whole conversation in itself. I mean, I would be fascinated to hear that whole story. I mean, how you did that. Well, we know how you did it mechanically, but the internals of that are pretty profound, because you definitely are succeeding in breaking out of the stagnant malaise of media by doing what you're doing. You break the paradigm, dude.
Yeah, I totally do. And I talk to some mainstream media people on occasion. A lot of them really hate me and they think that I'm crazy. It's because they've been brainwashed by an insane system, of course, but you know, you can't hold that against them. Well, actually I can, and I do. I don't know how much, like, my hate gives me strength, basically. I wouldn't be able to do alternative media 5 days a week, or even six or seven sometimes, and go out and lead protests and do all of this stuff if I didn't really, really hate the mainstream media. Like, I hate them so much that it gives me angelic strength. You know, like the power of Zeus itself has been energized into my veins. I hate the media so much. They're so douche, with their douchebaggery, their scumbaggery, and their various other forms of baggery. It's quite satisfying to know that you can go out there with minimal effort, It only takes you a few hours to interview somebody than publish an interview up to know that you've done a thousand times better job than a mainstream media 90-second report or 5-minute interview with one of these activist people, right? And you get the fullness of understanding of where they're coming from, who they are, and what they're doing, and precisely what it is that they're exposing. And I think this is a man quality. A man looks at a problem and just goes, bugger it, whatever else everybody else is doing, I don't care. I'm going to go out and solve this one. You know, and the wife will be at you, honey, you know, you're not bringing in enough money. We're never going to survive like this. Don't worry, woman. I'm a man. I'll work it out. Man provide. It's precisely what happens. You go out there and you start doing that. You start contributing to a better society as a good male role model should. Because I had to accumulate male role models myself because I didn't really have one of my dad to a large degree. Yeah, kind of left when I was 10. I only really saw him maybe once or twice a year if I was lucky for the following 17 years, and then he died. So what you going to do? You're going to have to accumulate lots of other male role models, don't you? Like we were saying, the village has to raise a child. I woke up cognizant that there was no village, so I had to build one. I had to build a community village among activists and professionals and things of this nature all over the city and all over the country and all over the frickin' world and in so many different nations that have now become my kind of like global conscience emotional support network. Like, seriously, you should see whenever I type a I'm depressed or something post on Facebook, all of a sudden there's like
I've seen those.
Just the seething mass of people struggling down, on top of each other to come and help me. Like, what? No, not Vinny. If he got Vinny. Well, I think it's
take
because
the rope off your neck.
Yeah. I think it's because I make jokes and stuff like that about all of this type of really scary material that often just basically either makes us angry or makes us afraid or something like that, that people have become dependent on it to a degree. Like, if you find out that weed really works for your glaucoma or something like that, you become dependent on weed for a good reason, because it's nourishing and it helps to fight the disease.
I view it as a preventative.
Yeah. It needs to be prevented daily.
About myself there.
Well, no, but it's good because we all have to, you know, at the end of the day, be sane to some degree, but be aware and then still continue living and trying to express those feelings in a way that is constructive as opposed to destructive and going around and, you know, punching walls or whatever it is that instinctually you want to do when you hear about some of this stuff. But, you know, it's like that old saying, the truth is going to basically piss you off. It's not something that's always going to be a bunch of flowers and rose petals. It's going to be something like that that happens. But there's a process. That's where you start. And then you find a way to – you find a coping mechanism to rely on for the first bit. And then you grow in knowledge. And for me, what I had to do was I had to go out and go through the process of trying to validate all of this. And I went through just – I had so many sleepless nights. Reading through extensive documentation and books and watching documentaries and doing that process that we've all done. Yep. And, you know, I found a little bit of comfort in the fact that at least I was starting to gain an understanding. So even if I didn't like the total analysis at the end of the day that I was forced to accept, after a while, you just realize, wow, it's really a lot bigger than we could even imagine. But you start to, through the process of learning and seeking further into it, for me, that was part of the stress reliever, was to absorb myself in it in a certain extent, and not for the purpose of trying to become sadistic or something, but for the purpose of trying to educate. And by having knowledge, I felt that the fear of it wasn't so insane. It wasn't so overwhelming, because I think that fear, true fear, comes from a place of not knowing. It becomes more of a fear of the unknown. And so I think that when you get past that point and then you find encouragement and support with other people around you, that's the next stage. And then the stage after that for me was when I started actually joining this sort of movement or resistance or just my contribution to this time in which we all live, and just putting my voice out there and letting my voice be heard. And I encourage everybody. You don't have to get up on a radio show and do it. Find your way to do it. Some people will express it through writing music. Some people will create amazing jokes. Some people will, I don't know, do some crocheting or something.
Design websites. Find
design
something.
Website. Yeah, exactly.
God, there's I could use a website developer right now.
Yeah. Well, it's like the opposite complex I was telling you about. I mean, just think for a moment. And exactly how many ways is the New World Order currently, right at this very moment, messing with you? And the answer has been pretty much every conceivable way. Okay, well,
yes. Yep.
Then you can fight back against it in any way you want. You pick any issue. Pick any issue, just one, to start with, and then you start working away at it. Either you need to educate yourself and then come up with a plan. I mean, what was the thing I said to one of my listeners the other day? Oh, yeah. And she said, Vinny, what do you do with all this information once you got it? And I go, well, being informed is the first step. Learning how to cope with being informed is the second step. Because once you realize what the hell is going on, it's really scary. And it messes your life up, as I said.
Well, and you can't unknow something once you know it. That's the hard part. There's things I wish I didn't know.
Yeah. You can't close Pandora's box again, as it were. And the third step is figuring out how you personally can make a difference. And then the last step is actually going ahead and making that difference.
Yeah, don't just sit around and let this just seep into you and destroy you. Like, you can, knowledge is power, and it has the power to go one way or the other. When you start putting that knowledge into action, that's a incredible thing, and you will really start to realize that this ultimately is a spiritual journey. And if that word spiritual frightens you because you're not, you know, you're not sure what we mean by that, you know, just think of it as a term of, you know, you're expanding your awareness, you're expanding your pride, you're going inside, you're dealing with all those emotions, you're learning how to express yourself, you're pulling yourself out of your own shackles in a way. And by having the system and the way the world is structured as sort of a template for this inner journey that we all have to go through to get rid of the inner tyrants and the inner New World Order or whatever, you start to realize that you're on a macro scale, and it's just at one end of the scale that might be different than another end of the scale, and it reflects itself in a different way. So it's an opportunity. I think it's an opportunity on an individual level, and it's also an opportunity on the collective level as well. And we really are in the time that's quite exciting. And even though some of it seems kind of dark, you just know that there's millions of people around the world that are they're working towards trying to come up with viable solutions, and they're doing a great job at it. And it's just going to get better. And that ball is just going to keep rolling higher. I'm actually encouraged by a lot of the young people that I meet, and how sharp they are, and how aware they are, and how passionate they are, and creative, and how they understand this way faster than when you're trying to talk to somebody that's been indoctrinated by the system for too long. So I have hope in the future, and I'm honestly just you start to feel proud. You start to feel encouraged to just be partaking in this time in history, because if you look back in history, it's been very dark for a long time, and our forefathers have had to fight their battles. This is just the battle that we have to fight, and it's a challenge. And there's a great quote by Carlos Castaneda that I have hanging up in my martial arts dojo, and it's basically talking about the difference between the average person and a warrior. And it's saying that the average person views all of these challenges as exactly that, a challenge that you have to hurdle, whereas the warrior looks at these challenges as an opportunity, as something that's exciting, as something that's mysterious, as something that is to be taken head on as an adventure. And so you basically just have to format a very individual expression of how you're going to take this on, and then it becomes an exciting journey.
It does. And I think people don't realize as well that you don't need anybody's help to start this journey. Usually you need help along the way. Yeah, you know, like have you ever seen that happen? You really want to do something, and you go out and you go, hey man, do you want to help me start with this website or that radio show or do this or that and the other? And the other person's like, yeah, I guess I will or whatever. And then eventually they tire of it and they bugger off and they leave you in the lurch. You know, at the end of the day, you don't need anybody's help to begin. All right, and in a lot of cases, little things. So the more you can do by yourself with greater efficiency and what have you, the better. You know, you don't become dependent as a result of that kind of activity.
I think of what we're doing here. I just got this metaphor. In a lot of ways, what we're doing is we're kind of a net. We catch people in this wave, which David was talking about. And it is dark, but at the same time, there's a lot of hope out there. I get regularly buoyed in optimism by the people that I talk to and looking around and seeing that, yes, the world is changing. But the way we're doing this is we're interlocked with threads. We are threads that come together at crucial junctures and create this net. And in that net flow people who some swim away, some don't get caught up in it, but in a way, what's happening is we're responsible, each one of us, for some small part of the mission. During the time that I was sick, there was about a month where I was very sick, and I seriously considered whether I was going to do this again. It was like, okay, you know, I feel like crap. I've got needles stuck in me. I'm kind of at my low ebb. What do I want to do with the rest of my life? And I went through several weeks of deep, intensive soul searching where I was like, I don't know if I'm going to do this anymore. And I reached a point at the end of the process where I went, you know, I can't imagine not doing this. I actually frickin' enjoy it. I enjoy the dark side of it because it gives me an impetus to keep going. And I get the joy when I see the glimmer of light at the end of some very dark tunnels. And I think that the three of us are kind of a symbol of a greater net that's out there all the time, and it's constantly reforming itself, and people drop off and there are shifts and changes, but at the end of the day, it's something that's working. We can't trust major media. We can't allow governments and lawyers and doctors and the medical establishment and the food industry anymore to tell us who we are and what we're going to consume. We have to become producers, and when we become producers, we begin to take a little bit of our power back as a result of that. And that's kind of the synergy that I see symbolized by what the three of us are doing.
I agree. That's it's well said. And I'm just honored to be a part of it and contribute what I can. I don't think any of us would say that, like Vinny was saying earlier, that we have all the answers, we know it all, and we're perfect and all that. That's not at all what's going on here, of course, because we don't work for the mainstream media. We actually are honest in our approach here, and we are seeking truth. And I think that the old maxim applies where, you know, ask the person that's seeking truth, not the person that's found it and is trying to pound it up in your face. You got to have an open mind. And once you start applying your creativity and really thinking outside the box, you'd be surprised the type of journey that you can go on. I found my life has become incredibly synchronistic. I've met incredible people. I've interacted with people all around the world. The energy is just it's amazing. Yeah. And it's actually culminated into something I was going to let you guys know about that we're doing here in Canada. We're doing something. It's myself and my partner, Chris Rusak, and we're basically on the same track as everything we've been talking about tonight, and we're thinking, what can we do in Canada that can really help bring some awareness to this type of information? So we came up with the concept of doing a road trip. So we're basically going to be hitting up 11 cities this spring.
I saw that.
In a couple months. Yeah, and we're doing
it.
It's called the Modern Knowledge Tour of Canada, and people can check it out at modernknowledge2014.com. And we're featuring an incredible cast of speakers. We're bringing Richard Dolan and Michael Tellinger on the road with us. We're going to be going in a Winnebago across Canada. Should be fun. And then we're featuring and meeting people all over the country at these various stops. We've got people Skyping in from all over the world, you know, like Santos Bonacci, Giara Griffin, Michael Tessarian, Dr. Carmen Bolter is going to be meeting us in Vancouver. We've got it's a credible cast of people you can check out. And they have a variety of information to share on a lot of different subjects. And a lot of these people have been on your show, Vinny, and probably yours as well, Randy. And I think that in Canada, it's an overdue thing where we're creating awareness. And I'm excited about it because I feel like I'm actually doing something with the knowledge and getting out there and talking about it. And the format that we're trying to create is just an open-minded discussion, interaction. We want to hear what people in Canada think. We want to hear their opinion. It's not just someone up on a stage pointing a finger and doing all the talking. It's going to be very interactive, very informative, very cutting edge. We're also going to have an online subscription for the tour that people from anywhere around the world can get involved with, where we're going to have exclusive live stream interviews. We're live streaming all the Skype in calls. We're going to be providing all kinds of exclusive content. So we got a really good team of people that are really helping us out. And this is just for us. It's a good place to start. Just get out there and get the conversation off Facebook for a while and get into a room, feel people's energy, look them in the eyes, and really have a conversation about our reality and where we're headed and what we can do about it.
I met both Rich and Michael Tellinger out at in Colorado when I was out at the Global BEM meeting in October, and you're going to have an amazing time. They boy, the two of them together in any room is just dynamite. I watched both of them blow away rooms of people when they were speaking. That's a pretty amazing project that you've got going on. Give your website out as well, David.
Yeah, it's modernknowledge2014.com. People can check it out there. We've got all kinds of stuff on there for people to view, and we're real excited about it. It's completely – we're hoping that the call gets answered. We're putting it out there. My partner and I, Chris, we're funding the whole thing ourselves and just trying to put it piece by piece and get all the venues booked and get all the speakers booked and all that kind of stuff. But we're getting an amazing response. And people here, I think, are ready. I think Canada's a sleeping giant. I think people are really going to start to see how awake people are here in this country. And I think if people can think of ways to do things like this, doesn't have to be this exactly, but just get out there and talk to people. That's what the whole goal is, isn't it? We're just all having a global conversation about rethinking where we're at and getting out there and connecting with people on these very important issues that affect us all. So I don't know. I think it's just a great place to start, and I'm just super pumped about it. I can't wait.
Vinny, tell us about what you got going on as well.
Well, just preliminary stages. Have you ever heard of Ian Wishart? He's from New Zealand. He's kind of like the, I don't know, I guess Walter Cronkite of New Zealand back in the day, I guess. He was the host of the Sunday program here, which is our equivalent of 60 Minutes kind of thing.
Okay.
Real good.
Oh, reading. Okay.
Just wrote this book, Totalitaria, that's gone bestseller, and he was on George Norrie about it, and I've just been in a conversation with him. He's going to let me narrate the audio book, and then we'll see where we go from there. It'll be the first audio book I've ever read out. So yeah, it'll be good because I don't like to read, and to be honest, I haven't actually read the book yet. But I know that it's written by Ian Wishart, so it's bound to be. And judging from what I've read so far of it, so it'll actually be it'll hit a double whammy. So I'll get to both read the book. The first book that I've read in God knows how many years.
So we're going to be witnessing Vinny's mind explosions as he goes through. Be like, oh, this
is
my
a
God.
Great gig, though. This is
oh shit!
A gig
really?
I'd like to get. Yeah. This is no. You're gonna. It's gonna be awesome. You're gonna win.
No, no, it'll be professionally
reading
done.
Reading a book is quite a project.
Oh yeah. Well, it'll be professionally done. I mean, I've already done the prologue for it and sent it to Ian as a sample, and he just says, "Yeah, let's go ahead and proceed with it and see what we can do." You know, and we don't know what we're gonna do with it. It's kind of like a tuxedo. You know, you never think to yourself, "Man, I don't have any occasion to wear a tuxedo," but once you got one, you find an occasion, don't you?
Vinny, you sent me this clip a while ago. What did you want me to do with this?
I wanted to play it.
It's 78 minutes and 17 seconds long.
Are you kidding me?
No.
No. That's a completely different link, bro.
Okay. All right, well,
that's a documentary. It's further down, bro. It's further down.
I downloaded the whole thing, so.
Oh, my God, bro.
Oh, we've got, if nothing else, we've got really good bandwidth.
Well, there's just a link to the actual song. I uploaded it while we were over the break, so you could just, you know, click the link and play it right away.
Well, I screwed up, so sorry. I'm basically massively ADD, so no Ritalin required, but some medication will be provided.
I was actually given a ADHD test one time, and also a brochure. On the brochure, it had all these little symptoms of ADHD, like high energy, creativity, inability to sit still, get bored easily, and all of that kind of thing, and wanting to have things your own way. And then when I was in business school, I think in Business 101, they had a slide up with exactly those same attributes on the slide. You know what they were describing? An entrepreneur.
Yeah.
The system wants to drug all the entrepreneurs so that we're much easier to control. That was my conclusion. Maybe I'm wrong, you know.
No, I don't think you're wrong about that at all.
I just assume scumbaggery.
Anyway, I think we need to wrap this puppy up, and I want to thank both of you for coming on. I don't have anything nearly as exciting as narrating an audiobook or doing a road tour of Canada. Trust me,
maybe I should just give a link to my website as well.
TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com.
That's Vinny with two N's and a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood doesn't go ahead, make my news. And also my YouTube channel, Vincent Eastwood, or Mr. News, MR News, Guerrilla Media. That's guerrilla, like a soldier, not like an ape. And it's only got one R, like a pirate.
Well, I'm Randy Moggins. I'm at offplanetradio.com, and I'm going to continue talking until either I run out of breath or somebody shuts me up, and it's not going to be easy. This has been Off Planet Radio and the Man Talk 6. We'll be back again. That's a threat. We'll see you very soon.